Hi, this is John DeLancey, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to episode 230 of The Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me, as usual, is the Comic Concierge. Hello, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going well. We are back at it to put a bow, no pun intended, it's Christmas time, on our Cary Grant retrospective. Dan, we've covered 8 films in this specific retrospective. We had covered 4 films previously in the Hitchcock retrospective, which won't necessarily count for what we're talking about today, but that gives us 12 total films that we've seen of Cary Grant. So today we're going to kind of break it down, give you our thoughts on his best performances, the best movies we saw in this 8-film series, as well as maybe some leading ladies that appeared in some of his films, some best supporting characters, and then a kind of a hodgepodge, potpourri, you might say, of funny moments or lines or scenes that we remember, and then just kind of tie it all up at the end with what we think of Cary Grant as an actor and as his body of work, like what is his legacy and what kind of defines him as someone on stage and on film. So Dan, any thoughts or anything before we get into it?
No, I think we're good. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking, you know, we've been talking even without, not even just this retrospective, but all the Hitchcock films. I've watched more Cary Grant movies this year in my life than ever before. So looking forward to wrapping it.
I've watched more Cary Grant films this year than I've ever watched of any actor ever in a year. I can 100% say that.
Nice.
So, all right, let's start ladies first, they say. So let's start with some ladies that have appeared in his films and kind of which ones we were most drawn to. Obviously, Cary Grant is known as kind of this iconic Hollywood star, heartthrob, things of that nature. He had the privilege of co-starring with many of the most iconic actresses of all time, whether it be some of the ones we talked about in the Hitchcock films or in some films that we didn't cover. But there was a number of them that we did see over the course of this 8 films that were both well-known and maybe some more under the radar leading ladies that got to play off of Cary in this series. So do you have any that really stood out to you that kind of separated themselves from the group, or that you were found yourself interested in possibly even seeing more of their film work or learning more about them?
Honestly, like, I think he had a lot of really strong actresses to play off of. And I think the one that to me, like, ranked amongst the best in the sense of her ability to kind of give and take and, you know, match his wit and his dramatic ability perhaps the most was Rosalind Russell and his Girl Friday. This is the only movie I've ever seen that she's done. And I am interested in seeing, like, what her personality is, like, in a different film, because it feels like she very much, was able to play the part of the balance for Cary Grant. You know, like, she's keeping up with all of his, like, all of his different ad libs and things like that. And she's just as funny, just as well-timed. And I thought, you know, her ability to kind of keep up with him is what made that movie so good. So I think she's, of all the actresses that we saw, a lot of great ones, but her comedic timing to me was just bar none the best.
I think one thing that I find interesting in covering Cary Grant over the course of all of these films is you going into it, if you went in blind and you didn't know anything about him or the films that he was in or the actresses and things of that nature, I guess, I feel like you would go into it with the thought that as this iconic, you know, legend of Hollywood with the good looks and the persona and the charisma that goes with him, I feel like you would go in thinking that most of the actresses that played opposite to him would almost be in, I don't know if I want to say subordinate position, but you would almost have like they're just fawning about him or that they're, you know, doing that. And I am impressed with, and I don't know if it was more the directors and the casting agents and things of that nature, or if it was something about Cary Grant himself, but he doesn't play that on his end very much. And I found that he, whether he was letting it or allowing it to happen, or whether it was just because of the actresses, I don't want to take the agency away from the actresses, but like so many of them that seem to like go toe to toe with him or seem to like stand up to his like being almost on this pedestal, you would think. And I was impressed with the number of times that we do see actresses. And I think Rosalind Russell is the best example of that, probably the one that you're using. But I feel like there's a number of those that we've seen, like Katharine Hepburn does it, of course, right? Like in almost all of her roles, she's like going toe to toe with him. She's not backing down. She's giving it right back to him. I believe we see it in a number of films. And I was surprised going throughout this whole thing of how many times like the actress is just like she gets the assignment and she's right there ready to like do it and to not back down. And I thought that was somewhat refreshing going through this. What did you think?
Yeah, he was not afraid to work with strong female leads. Like, that was certainly the case, both in star power as well as performances. Like, I think he understood the importance of having a strong co-lead. Like, it couldn't just be him. Like, having that duo was just as powerful as him being just the leading star. He understood the importance of a good give and take, whether it be like a romantic film. And a lot of these movies we went through, even though this is the Cary Grant retrospective, like even in His Girl Friday, he's a supporting character. He's not the lead. And that's the case for, I think, a lot of these movies. He was a support or part of an ensemble. You know, he was probably the top build, but he wasn't necessarily the focus of the movie. And I think partially because he knew that, you know, a little can go a long way. And certainly, obviously, I think the end product bears that out.
And I don't think on these eight films specifically, I don't know if I can point to a single, if you were to take like the actors that had the most screen time and like the largest role, I can't point to a single one that I would say was like the damsel in distress or was like the head over heels. I don't have any agency in myself. Like, I feel like every one of them in a different way stands up and like goes toe to toe with him. And I think you could like break it down almost every single one. Maybe the closest one that doesn't is Priscilla Lane and Arsenic and Old Lace, but that's such a minor part that I don't know if it's really gets that. But like I said, both times we see Katharine Hepburn and Bringing Up Baby in the Philadelphia Story, like they're toe to toe. I even think, you know, like Irene Dunne in Penny Serenade does, Deborah Kerr in Affair to Remember does. So I think all of these, you know, even June Dupres from None But the Lonely Heart,
yeah,
you know, I say what you will about the film, but I feel like they all are basically standing right up to him. My favorite one, I was really torn between the one you picked, Rosalind Russell. I had Deborah Kerr as a number three for An Affair to Remember, but ultimately I think if I was to have to pick my number one, then maybe it seems like a cheat, but I got to go with Audrey Hepburn in Charade.
Yeah,
just because it's the only time we get to see those two play off of each other. So like, I wish there was more examples of that so I could have seen what else they did, but I don't think you can go wrong with almost any of these. To me, it was between Rosalind Russell and Audrey Hepburn.
And I would also say Irene Dunne in Penny Serenade, because again, she was really the lead there. She carried a lot of the emotional weight. So she was one I considered as well, along with the ones who were mentioned.
I agree. I think one thing that has happened in a few of these films, though, because they're such strong leads and co-leads, like you said, sometimes Cary Grant's not the lead, but if we're taking Cary Grant in each one of these and we're taking all of the females that we just talked about, there's a lot of strong performances between those two. And I think it almost leads to a little bit different than what we saw with the Hitchcock retrospective, where in Hitchcock, so many times he's building the world and creating all of these supporting actors and actresses that just add so much color and flavor to the film and the world that he's created. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case in these. Obviously, we're dealing with a bunch of different directors across the board here, but I feel like because there's so much time spent on these strong actresses and Cary Grant, that sometimes the supporting characters in some of these films, to me, seemed like they were more background than somebody that was really like bringing something extra. But I do think there was some exceptions and some supporting characters that definitely did stand out and resonated with me. What about you? What were some of the supporting characters that you really enjoyed during these eight films?
There was a lot. Kathleen Nesbitt was one in An Affair to Remember that really stood out. She doesn't have, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes of screen time at the most, but there's just something like so endearing about her presence and such a vital role too, because I think her ability to kind of bring those two together and like there's something like so endearing about her that makes that scene such a pivotal scene. Really, it's kind of where their relationship really changes, is just being able to interact with her. Mm-hmm. and it doesn't feel like she's acting. You feel like you're just looking at someone being who they are. So she was certainly one that stood out to me. And then Arsenic and Old Lace, like pretty much all, you know, that, again, talking about an ensemble, there's so many there. But, you know, I had to point out John Alexander, who played Teddy, just because he was obviously like the comedic linchpin in the sense of, mm-hmm. like, you know, he was the big, you know, kind of looking for the big laugh, the over the top character, you know, the one that perhaps was the most fun out of all of them. But that pretty much all the characters in Arsenic and Old Lace really could deserve a mention.
Yeah, I had basically the whole cast of Arsenic and Old Lace that I was like, because it's all of them, I don't know if I can mention a specific one. I think I'm probably drawn to Peter Lorre as Dr. Einstein, as well as the two aunts. Gina Dare and Josephine Hull play those two parts both on the Broadway show and in the movie, but Aunt Martha and Aunt Abby. But there's so many good, Teddy's a great character. Like there's so many good characters in Arsenic and Old Lace. So I think that's like the most ensemble piece we get out of these eight films, I would feel pretty confident in saying. I also had Kathleen Nesbitt as grandmother Janu, or however you said that name, in Affair to Remember written down as well. I did want to give us tiny bit of a mention to, even though I'm not huge on the film, Jane Wyatt, who played Aggie Hunter in None But the Lonely Heart. I thought that character was just kind of a refreshing, because a lot of times in, especially in some of these types of films where we're dealing with, a lot of these films deal with the subject of marriage and divorce and affairs and things of that nature. So you get a lot of this like shrouded in like, not mystery necessarily, but people that are dancing around their true feelings. And Jane Wyatt's character in None But the Lonely Heart is the opposite of that. Like she is just a breath of fresh air. I'm going to tell you exactly how I feel. I don't care what your response is. I'm going to be honest with you. And it is what it is. Take it or leave it. So I really enjoyed that. But my favorite supporting role in probably these eight films would be Edgar Buchanan, who played Applejack Carney in Penny Serenade. Okay. I thought he was just a lot of fun, and I don't know, that film needed him.
Yeah.
So I think he was more important to, you could say the same thing for Kathleen Nesbitt, right? Like that film, because she was really a turning point, like you said, for Deborah Kerr and Cary Grant in An Affair to Remember. But I feel like with the seriousness and the drama that Penny Serenade has and the touchy subject matter, that a little tiny bit of comedic presence from Edgar Buchanan was very much needed for you to like survive watching that film. Yeah. I'm not saying it's like a terrible film and you shouldn't watch it, but I'm saying like sometimes in a film like that, you need like to catch your breath every once in a while. And I thought that he did a great job providing that opportunity.
Yeah, it's a great call out that his presence was certainly needed. Like he provided so much heart in that movie. He felt like the best stand-in dad in a way. Like the scene of him changing the diaper and stuff like that. Like he was, anytime he was on screen, it was a nice relief. So that's a really good call out.
Right. So those were some of our favorite supporting characters. Before we get into maybe some funny moments that we like or remember or lines or different things of that nature, I was wondering, Dan, if you had, there's two different ways to look at these films, right? We can look at the overall movie rankings, which I think we'll save for last, but you can also look at Cary Grant performances, and that ranking may or may not be different than the overall movie rankings. Do you have maybe 2, 3, 4 performances that really stood out to you from Cary Grant? Because we talked about the fact that he's only ever nominated for the 2 Academy Awards, right? And that was for Penny Serenade and None But the Lonely Heart. So if you were able to like go back and say, forget about whoever he was competing against in any of those given years, you know, whatever movies came out, we're not going to look at that. But if you were just to look at his filmography in these eight films, is there two or three films or four films that you feel like he was most deserving to get some sort of recognition for his performance?
I do think he was great in Penny Serenade. I do think he was deserving of the Oscar there, because he, you know, it, in a way you could easily point to it as like Oscar bait, because it's this, you know, film about loss and losing a child, and seems like a obvious, you know, dramatic turn for him. But he's also really good in it. But he also has moments where he can shows that comedic side of him really well. So I think if you're just giving the best kind of performance of him as an actor, that's typically the movie I go with, and I would say Penny Serenade. I think the movie I think of first when I think of Cary Grant is probably His Girl Friday. I think that is just, you know, him doing his vaudeville act. I mean, you can say that or Bringing Up Baby, either of those two, but like his, just like the quick one-liners, the him kind of commanding the scene, that to me is like probably my favorite comedic performance he's done. So those are the two that I tend to go to.
I think too, with His Girl Friday and his performance in that one, I feel like the movie best fit like his level of humor and his timing and things of that nature, which is, I think, one thing that I would use to separate in my head, how I separate His Girl Friday and Bringing Up Baby. Like, nothing against Bringing Up Baby, but I think like that was like playing the tape at like 3x speed versus like, you know, a normal speed. Like, I felt like that was almost going too fast and too like unhinged for him in a way. I mean, I think he was great in it, but like, I think His Girl Friday is like that right amount of speed and craziness, but not too crazy. And I think it just allowed him to like hit a sweet spot when it came to all of his comedic one-liners, his quips, his timing and stuff like that, which I think was, it served him really well. I think that's one of the best examples of his comedy and the film blending together and just giving him the perfect opportunity to just kind of like flex that part of his skill set. I totally agree. I'm 100% on board with Penny Serenade being one of the ones that he got the Oscar for. I think there's some very moving sequences in there. I think there's some real authentic aspects when they're first, you know, dealing with a newborn and trying to figure things out. I think that's totally nails it on the head for what almost any parents to their first child are going through and trying to figure out. And I think you also do get some dramatic sequences, like his whole speech in front of the, I don't know if it was a judge or whoever it was that he was trying to make a case for being able to, you know, keep the child and things of that nature. I think that was like some of his best dramatic moments that I've seen out of him so far. So I definitely agree. I do think that the combination of his performance in An Affair to Remember and Charade both give him, whereas His Girl Friday really gave him the chance to do the comedic thing, I think Charade and An Affair to Remember also give him a chance to do some other sides of his personality and other sides of his acting. Like, obviously Charade, you get a little bit more of the James Bond-esque tones. You still get the one-liners, you still get the quips, you still get the very witty dialogue back and forth between him and Audrey Hepburn, but you definitely get the James Bond-esque. And then I think An Affair to Remember really gives you like the romantic slash I'm gonna make you fall for me type side of him as well. So I think there's a little bit of all of those that I appreciate with both Penny Serenade and An Affair to Remember, His Girl Friday and Charade. I think they all kind of like showcase a different aspect of what makes Cary Grant the great actor that he was. So as far as moments that you really remember or that stuck with you, or lines or scenes or sequences and things of that nature, did you have any that like really stood out that you wanted to highlight during this episode?
I think regarding lines, or just before the one scene that you mentioned with him in Penny Serenade, giving like the speech of trying to appeal to the judge regarding like why they should keep this child, I think is certainly like one of his best written and like performed scenes. some of the ones that kind of stand out just because of their comedic timing. There's a lot in Bringing Up Baby, but for some reason, and you could say it doesn't age well, but it still caught me off guard and still super memorable. It's when they open the door, he's in like the nightgown, and he yells, "I just went all gay all of a sudden," and it's just like, I feel like if an actor would do that today, it'd be like a big deal, and like, oh my god, or maybe not as much now, but it was so. Apparently, it was like one of the first times it was ever said in that way mm-hmm. in a movie before, and you know, I wonder if he was the purpose behind it, but I don't know. I found that to be quite the moment. And then His Girl Friday has like a lot of great lines. I would never do them justice saying them because like I don't have his ability to in timing and stuff like that. But
right.
the one line that she's a girl who's generous to a fault, except other people's faults. I think that kind of is one. It's well written, and two, kind of shows like their relationship really well. But specific lines, and though I struggle sometimes with remembering them. I feel like at the time we hear them, I'm like those are really good, but I tend to forget. But those are ones that stuck with me as I look back at some of the past movies we've watched.
I think that those are some great examples. I would be hard pressed to narrow down a line from either His Girl Friday or Charade. Like there are so many in those two films that it's like really hard. I think the ending of His Girl Friday, where he's getting a scoop on something and it's going to like a strike or something that's taking place. And the person on the other end of the line is telling him it's in Albany, which is where the actress's former flame lives, I guess, that he was battling with. And she agrees. She says, all right, well, honeymoon in Albany. And Walter Burns, Cary Grant's character, says, well, isn't that a coincidence? We're going to Albany. I wonder if Bruce can put us up. It's just like the audacity for him to like say that is something crazy. And then I think also like the whole intro scene of His Girl Friday, where they're at the newspaper office or whatever, and
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, and I believe Bruce is like standing out at one point. He's standing out in like the waiting area or whatever. But like the lack of care that Cary Grant has for the fact that guy's there, and it even follows through into like the dinner sequence later, where they're having dinner, the three of them, or lunch or whatever it is, and it's like he just absolutely doesn't care that this guy's here. He's gonna say whatever he wants, and it's just like a funny aspect of that off. And then I think another thing that they do really well in Charade was the fact that Cary Grant's character goes by like a number of different names in that film. I don't remember exactly how many, three or four at least. And there's so many clever lines between Audrey Hepburn's character and Cary Grant's character with that name. I think the funny part is like towards the end, they're talking about how when they finally kind of admit that they've fallen for each other and this, that, or the other. And Audrey Hepburn's character says, oh, I love you, Adam, Alex, Peter, Brian, whatever your name is. And then she says, oh, I love you. I hope we have a lot of boys and we can name them all after you. And I'm just like, that's such a perfect like way to do that. As far as that goes, she has another funny line too, where they're in the beginning where they're trying to introduce each other or something that Cary Grant's character says, do we know each other? And she says, why do you think we're going to? And he says, I don't know. How would I know? And her response is, because I already know an awful lot of people. And until one of them dies, I couldn't possibly meet anybody else. And I just thought that, I don't know who wrote that line, but like, that was just absolutely fantastic. And then I think going to like just a classic, I think Arsenic and Old Lace, the scene towards the end where Cary Grant's character is on the phone on the stairs, and you know, all kinds of craziness is breaking out in the living room and different things are happening. And I think that's also the scene where Dr. Einstein thinks that he may be caught or whatever, but Cary Grant's like just on the phone and talking to him, but trying to convince himself that he's not crazy. And then I think just the way that that's choreographed was like a great scene in Arsenic and Old Lace. And I'm sure there's a bunch of other ones you could go to, as you know, once, like when he discovers that there's a body in the window seat, or when he discovers that his aunts are behind it. Like, there's just a lot of good physical comedy that he does in that one, with his facial expressions and body movements and things of that nature.
Yeah.
All right.
Lots to choose from.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to choose from. It's kind of the thing where it's not that his movies are necessarily quotable. I don't think you just like remember like a one-off, like there's not as many one-liners, because it's a lot more of the back and forth that leads to like a funny punchline or a funny ending to their like dialogue. So it's hard to like pinpoint like a specific quote, but there's so many like back and forth that you're like, oh, that was hilarious and I want to remember that. But then like 2 seconds later you get another one, especially with stuff like Bringing Up Baby and His Girl Friday. Like, they're going at such a fast pace, it seems like, that unless you're taking notes, like you're already on to the next funny line or the next funny like back and forth. So it's definitely hard to pinpoint lines, I feel like, in some of these films.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So that leads us to our overall, do you have anything else as far as like moment, scenes, lines that we haven't had a chance to highlight?
Bringing Up Baby has a lot of good scenes. There's the scene in the torn dress scene in Bringing Up Baby, which is really done with just all physical comedy. That's, I think, one of his best attributes, his ability to do stand-up comedy, or not stand-up comedy, but physical comedy that has a bunch. There's like the scene at like the with the dinosaur, you know, trying not to destroy it, like when near the end, that really stands out too. And like all the reactions to like running into the leopard and, you know, things like that. So those all kind of stand out to me as well.
I think too, in that film, the beginning of the film where they're first meeting each other, and she's just like so hard to take, right? Like, she's just bananas, and he has so many lines in that first sequence that's like, I wish I hadn't have met you, or like you know, these different things where he's saying like, if you know, if somebody, I think they even carry it into later, like if like that they need to pad the jail cell instead of like letting her in or letting it out, like once they get to know her, they're just gonna pad it or something like that. Like he's very dismissive of like, I you know, my day was going a lot better before I ever ran into you type of stuff. And I think that's a lot of the funny stuff, because you know, whether it's the golf section or like beating up his car and things of that nature, it's like, what is going on here and why is he putting up with it? So I think there's definitely a lot of good stuff there. I want to do a couple more things before we kind of wrap this up. One will be our overall movie ranking of these eight. And then I want to talk a little bit in closing of kind of like what makes Cary Grant Cary Grant, what are our favorite parts about him. We've already touched on a couple different aspects of his like toolbox and what he had to play off of, and kind of go like with what our favorite parts of him as an actor were. What did he do best, and what was his strengths and opportunities, that type of stuff. So first off, with his movie rankings, and I don't know about for you, I found it somewhat easy to rank my bottom two and my top two. And then I have four in the middle that I really can go back and forth on depending on like what mood I'm in. How was the chore of ranking these films for you?
Very similar. I think my top three are pretty set and my bottom two, but four, five, and six are really kind of even for me. But okay.
Well, let's start with the bottom two and see if we line up on this one.
I just switched these. I had flip flopped and I just switched it before we, because I was like, no, I think this is the right order. So this shows you how back and forth I've gone with these. But at number eight, I had None by the Lonely Heart. I'll keep it short because we did the whole episode on it. But I think it was just doomed to fail from the start because it was just bad miscast and it didn't work. And then at number seven, I have The Philadelphia Story, which I don't think is necessarily a bad movie per se. I found it to be a little all over the place. And again, like I think we talked about just the weird relationship dynamics and that, and it didn't necessarily work for me. So those were my bottom two.
Okay, well, so far we have linked our brainwaves and thought the exact same, because I also have None But the Lonely Heart at 8 and The Philadelphia Story at number 7. I know a lot of people will probably question us having The Philadelphia Story so low, but I do feel like the more people watch it in modern day, the less I see people going crazy about it. I don't know if it had like a time where like everybody just like really exalted that film and now people are coming around to it or what, but I feel like we're not in the minority, even though it feels like it's a minority opinion, but I feel like the more time goes, the less in the minority we are on those. So, and I agree with you. None But the Lonely Heart is just bad casting. The age just really makes everything else fall a kilter. Like it just doesn't, it ruins so many of the dynamics in the film of him not being the right age that he should have been to play that role.
Yeah.
All right.
And then for the next two. So, and then like after that, those are two movies I ultimately didn't like that much. The rest are movies I would recommend and end up enjoying just to lesser degrees. At 6, I had Bringing Up Baby. Again, I thought it was, it was very funny and enjoyable, just kind of light, and it didn't have much to it beyond that. So that's why I have it a little bit lower at number 6.
I am really, I really struggle with my 3 through 6. That's for dang sure. Cause I feel like each one of them highlights something different and I'm not sure which way I should go. And I want to make sure that it's not just a personal bias that's going into one of these and in which, I appeared in the play and I know the play very well, but I don't want that to be the reason why I rank it high. But on a different day, I could have this at number 4, number 3 out of these 8, but I have Arsenic and Old Lace next at number 6, like I said, only because I'm trying to make sure I'm not voting out of bias.
I understand. I'll get to that later. So I want to have as much bias, but at 5, I have An Affair to Remember. It's just a classic Hollywood. It feels like, I said, it's like your mom's favorite movie, which isn't, I mean, that as a compliment to it. We got to see, as you mentioned, a little bit different side of Cary Grant here. It's just romantic with a capital R, but not as comedic. So again, not that it have to be. I enjoyed it. It didn't hit me as like hard, and I wasn't as, I didn't have it as good of time, or it didn't have that emotional impact as some of his other films. So that's why I had it at 5.
Makes sense. I will have one that you already talked about at my number 5, and that is Bringing Up Baby. I believe, like, this is the first one we watched, right? Out of this group, I think it was the first one.
Yeah, Bringing Up Baby was the first one.
Yeah, and like we said when we talked about it, like, this is, the wheels are off of the coaster, like, it's unhinged crazy, and like, I don't know if it, like, out of all of these, 6 through 1, I would recommend to anybody. I could see some people not going for Bringing Up Baby, though. Like, I could see it not working for some folks just because of, like, how fast it is going. But I enjoyed it. I just think if I'm going, like, straight up slapstick comedy, I'm going to rank this one lower than another one that's going to come up later. So that's why I kind of found a spot for it here at number 5.
At my number 4, I have one that you mentioned already with Arsenic and Old Lace. This is one I watched before. I think it was one we both watched before coming into this. Mm-hmm. And I loved it beforehand. I still really love it now. It, like we mentioned, that cast is incredibly great. You could argue that Cary Grant gets a little bit over the top. He even argued that himself. Mm-hmm. But I think even despite that, it's a really good time. And I think, speaking of recommending to people, it is probably one that would, if you have like a family over for the holidays, it's a good one to throw on, because it could probably make everyone in the room happy, because it's a little bit crazy. It's got, you have Teddy who's, charging up the stairs and all that, and then Cary Grant doing his stuff. So that's what I have at number 4.
Right. If I didn't struggle with 6 and 5, I'm definitely struggling with 4 and 3. So I think for 4, I'm going to stick with how I have it here on my Excel spreadsheet. And I am going to go with Penny Serenade here at number 4. I think this is definitely a film that he deserved to get the Oscar for. I think that this is clearly some of the most dramatic stuff that I've seen him do at all. And I am currently at 27 Cary Grant films that I've seen this year.
Wow.
So even out of the other ones that we did not cover in the 12, you know, during the Hitchcock and the, you know, the four there and the eight here, which equal 12, but like there's another 15 I've seen. I still don't think I've seen maybe one other film that is as dramatic as he gets to do in a completely different way, a different type of drama. But so like, I definitely appreciate what we get from him in that role. And like I said, Irene Dunne is great in this. This is one of my favorite supporting characters with Applejack Carney, played by Edgar Buchanan. I think one thing that I will hold against Penny Serenade a tiny bit is the ending. And I understand why it had to be done how it was, yeah. But it did come across as a little, the word cheap comes to my mind. I don't know if that's the best word, but like, or too neat, maybe too neat and clean, yeah, at the end. So like that holds it back, I guess, if I'm trying to like find something to divide it with one of these other films that I also really like, I guess I'll use that. So Penny Serenade is my number four.
And Penny Serenade's my number three. And like a lot of what you said, I actually was like, I worried about that movie going into it because I'm like, oh, this is the movie's nominated for an Oscar. I was ready for it to be kind of dry and just to the point where it was like almost unwatchable, like almost like homework. But it wasn't that. It certainly was, you know, more on the serious side. It certainly had some really dramatic and obviously some like devastating moments within that. It's certainly a film about tragedy, but I thought it was still well balanced and well made. I love the, you know, the use of the actual like record and how it transitions from different scenes, and the framing of it I thought was done well, being able to kind of go through this life and how music played a role and utilizing those music cues throughout. So I do agree with you, like that the ending is probably one element that is probably the weakest point of it. Again, I think probably at that time was the only way they could get it made was having an ending like
right.
That somehow has people go home a little happy. But despite that, I think what's it's still its ability to approach rather challenging topics, especially for that era is pretty impressive. And as mentioned, Cary Grant, like it's what I consider his best performance overall. So at a three.
So for my number three, it's one that you've already mentioned as well. This is where I will slot in An Affair to Remember. I do think that if I was ranking these based on my own personal, like what I want to see Cary Grant do and what I'm going to get the most enjoyment from, I don't know if I would rank this number three, but I am not a female. And like, I feel like I gotta give some love to like what to me feels like the most straight up romantic performance that we got out of these eight films from Cary Grant in this one. Like, you have Cary Grant and Deborah Kerr on a cruise ship, you got him, you know, winning her over, they take the protocol where they go see her grandmother, and then obviously you transition to, you know, the big city and things of that nature. But I do know some people have some issues with that second half of it, or maybe the last act of it. But I just feel like this highlights him as a romantic lead more than any of the other ones. And I feel like there's a large swath of the population, especially back in this time period, that probably really thought this was like the best of the best. And when I was doing some research, I just kept finding like so many comments from what felt like middle-aged, well, maybe not middle-aged anymore, 60, 70 year old ladies that really love An Affair to Remember. Let me tell you, there was quite a few, and I'm talking about dozens of comments from that in like some different threads that I saw on social media, as far as like, what's your favorite Cary Grant role and things of that nature. And I don't know. I liked the playing off of those two. Maybe I'm just a sucker for something set on a cruise ship. Because I feel like that's one of my happy places. So, I don't know. An Affair to Remember for me gets, the number three spot.
Nice. No, I there's a lot to love about the movie, and I think I could even see enjoying it more on a second watch. But
yeah,
So now I'm curious if our one or two, or I think they might be flip flopped. If I'm thinking my number one is your number two, and your two is my number one. It was hard, but I could, like, because These two, I could feel like I could probably go either way, but at number two, I have Charade. Like we mentioned, it's like the best James Bond movie that's not a James Bond movie. The chemistry in that film is so amazing. Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn, like Audrey Hepburn is so good in that. Like she really holds her own. And the cast overall, Walter Matthau, has it, I mentioned like its trailer is like this shows a blender of like comedy, romance, action, and it does. It is that movie that has a little bit of everything and works really well. This was the first time I ever watched it, so it had a little bit. So His Girl Friday had a little bit of edge because that's a movie I've already loved going into this. So that was my favorite going in. It still remains my favorite, but Charade. Fact that this is the first time I've ever watched it, and I feel like watching it again will probably just increase my enjoyment of it. But I had that at two, and then His Girl Friday I had at number one. I just love that movie. It's to me one of the funniest movies ever made, and it remains that way. So I'm guessing yours just flip flop, but maybe I'm wrong.
For me, I don't know if I can even call them one and two. Like for me, this is like one A and one B, right? Like there's such a fine line separating these two films, but you are correct. I have His Girl Friday at number two and Charade at number one. I had His Girl Friday at number one throughout this. It was like the second movie we watched?
Yeah.
I think it was the second film we watched, if not the third. And it was in the number one spot the entire time because we didn't cover Charade until the very last film. That was the eighth film we covered. So His Girl Friday was in the number one spot the entire time. So maybe it's recency bias that then Charade came in that eighth film. And I was just like, I fell in love with that. I don't know if it's the Audrey Hepburn factor. I do know there's some crazy stuff, like maybe some of the stuff with the three amigos that are playing the quote unquote bad guys is a little out there and whatnot, but like, that's what James Bond stuff was too, right? Like a lot of that stuff was kind of crazy and out there as well, but it literally comes down to me between I love Rosalind Russell and she definitely goes toe to toe with Cary Grant and like all of that. And I'm there for that. But I think some of my favorite parts of His Girl Friday are more Cary Grant centric, where he's just doing his one-liners, doing his quips, you know, acting like Bruce or whatever his name was isn't even in the building. And then there is a sequence in His Girl Friday where we kind of go away from Cary Grant for a while and we're dealing mainly with Rosalind Russell and the other news reporters and things of that nature. And to me, like, I guess I don't know, when I was trying to decide which one should go first, I'm like, I get more Cary Grant in Charade than I do in His Girl Friday. I don't know if that really should matter. But I just love the back and forth between all of the different names of Cary Grant and Charade and then Reggie, Audrey Hepburn's character. But to me, like, whichever one I've watched more recently would probably be the one I rank higher. So if you catch me and His Girl Friday has been the one I've watched more recently, I would probably tell you that one, because it was, like I said, when we were talking earlier, I feel like it's the right tempo and it's the right setting and everything for Cary Grant to just be his funniest. And I love that about it. I guess I'm a sucker for the only appearance between Audrey Hepburn and Cary Grant though.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's sad that that's the only movie they ever did together, but maybe it makes it a little extra special because of that. I did have a question though, because considering, we did, other Cary Grant films during the Hitchcock retrospective, would your number one, would you still put it above like North by North, any of the Hitchcock films that we did, like North by Northwest or
so Thief, you know? I've done a lot of thinking of this because I've been compiling my Cary Grant list over on Letterboxd, which like I said is 27 films long, and when you start getting into that number, it starts getting really hard to like place individual films within that. I will say that there's two films that I have, so take None But the Lonely Heart and The Philadelphia Story out of it, because those are like my bottom two in this set of eight. I have all of the other ones ahead of Suspicion and To Catch a Thief. So I have all six of the other films we covered in this part ahead of those two Hitchcock films, To Catch a Thief and Suspicion. I think where it gets hard for me is when you bring in Notorious and North by Northwest, because yeah. I really loved those two films. So I would probably make my top four some combination, and I'm not going to I'm not going to let you pin me down in the order, but it would be North by Northwest and Charade and Notorious and His Girl Friday would be my top four. I don't know. Like currently I think I have North by Northwest and Charade both as 5-star. And I believe I currently have Notorious and His Girl Friday at 4.5, but I would have to check that. But like those four films to me are his top four films that I've ever seen. What about you?
I think His Girl Friday would still remain number one for me.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, North by Northwest, number two, Charade, and then Notorious, and then finishing up with Penny Serenade would probably be my top five.
Very good.
But similar, I would similar, Catch a Thief and Suspicion would probably be at least everything beyond my bottom two.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe to Catch a Thief higher than Bringing Up Baby, maybe. Okay. I don't know, but it's debatable.
Right. It's almost like you got to get to a point, then you have to have a new series and you just watch these,
yeah,
these top
yeah.
ones and try to like really make some distinguishing aspects of them. But I will say, like, I would highly recommend, like, if you're interested in any of these films, if you've been following along with us, there are a plenty of other films of Cary Grant's that you can check out, and I have found more than not that most of them I have enjoyed, at least to the point where I don't regret watching them and things of that nature. Like, I feel like there's 6 or 7 films that are towards the bottom, like let's say a half dozen that you probably don't need to watch. And then I feel like there's about another 10 that I would put real close to, you know, I still have, you know, Penny Serenade, Arsenic and Old Lace, Bringing Up Baby and A Fair to Remember, To Catch a Thief and Suspicion ahead of them. But there's like another at least 8 or 9 films that I really have enjoyed that I have watched since then, including The Talk of the Town. The Toast of New York is really funny. That's another one where Cary Grant's not necessarily the lead role, and it's three con artists that are kind of teaming up to do some craziness. And then it has been one film that I've watched that I actually currently have at my number 5, which is right after North by Northwest, Charade, Notorious, and His Girl Friday. So, and I may be alone on this one, but this is also another one where I feel like it's more, a little bit more of some of his dramatic aspects come into it. And I didn't know this film existed, but I would call this like the grandfather of all submarine warfare films. And that one's called Destination Tokyo. Okay. There is some maybe politically incorrect language here and there, because this is happening during a different time and place. But yeah. I really enjoyed it. There's not a single female in the film, I don't believe. So I don't know how many Cary Grant films you get where there's no females in the film, but this is one of them. So I would highly recommend at least checking that one out. But you really can't go wrong so far. I mean, I still have probably 17 films on my list that I still need to watch, because I'm just trying to be as completist as possible with this for some reason, because that's how I am. But yeah, there's only been, like I said, I have 3 ranked lower than None But the Lonely Heart. So I would avoid those. And those are titled She Done Him Wrong, Once Upon a Time, which is about a dancing caterpillar. And I don't think I need to say anything more about that one. And then Gunga Din, I was not a big fan of it. That's another war film that I felt like was pretty awful. But as far as Cary Grant goes, like, do you have a favorite aspect of his? Because we've talked a lot about, you know, he has the clever dialogue, the quick one-liners and stuff like that. He has the physical comedy where, you know, whether it's acrobatics or facial and physical expressions and things of that. We have the James Bond, you know, cooler than the other side of the pillow aspects. You have the romantic side. You have some of the drama that we get in something like Penny Serenade. Do you find like he's best when he leans into one of those more than the other, or do you like it when he blends a few of those together in a role?
I think it's the blending tends to work the best. I think, you know, we see a little bit of all those different elements. I think what's good about him, honestly, is that he can fit himself to fit what the role is calling for. Like we mentioned, obviously not part of this retrospective, but North by Northwest, like if that was the only Cary Grant movie you've ever watched, you wouldn't categorize him as a comedic actor. He doesn't really use comedy at all within that role, but it doesn't really need to. And it's one of his better performances. So I think what's really good about him is I think he has a confidence to him that is very apparent. And even if he was faking it, who knows? Oh, you know, but I think that, as we talked about, having being willing to work with strong characters and making that he doesn't always have to be the star in the scene. I think he's very generous as an actor in that sense, at least looking from the outside in. And that's, I think, one of his best attributes is he's a really good reactor. Like his face is always, you know, like when within a scene, like he's always, I think, listening, and you always know what is on his character's mind all the time. So I think that's kind of his best ability. And as generic as it sounds, he just has that it factor. Like he feels like he has that star quality that is undefined. Like you can't really define it, but he certainly has it.
He's interesting because he's one of those stars that sometimes you have, like the Hollywood star that just appeals to, I don't know, one group of people or the other. Like I feel like Cary Grant appeals to like both men and women. Like, you know, the women want him to date them, or the guys want to be him or to hang out with him. Like I feel like he appeals across the board in a way. I also feel like he had an uncanny ability to, without actually breaking the fourth wall, he somehow had a way with these very subtle looks, gestures, or lines where you felt like he was looking at you or winking at you in the camera or delivering a line to you, where it felt like you almost had a relationship with him and you were like there, like in on the joke with him, even though the rest of the people on the set or on the scene aren't. And but without making it like so obvious that, you know, it's like something where you're just completely timing out and looking at the camera and talking to them, like he did it in such a subtle way that I really appreciated. And then I think something else that you were kind of alluding to as well is when you get like these super known actors, especially back in this time period, like the Rhett Butler, like some of those like just bigger than life characters. I think this is something that both Cary Grant and to a point, I think Jimmy Stewart does as well, but I don't feel like Cary Grant was ever afraid to look silly.
Yeah,
like he was critical of himself. Like he would analyze it. And like we talked about with Arsenic and Olace, thought that he was too over the top and too, you know, overacting. But I don't think that's the same as like, he doesn't care if he's in a dress in one sequence. He doesn't care if he's, you know, being a little flamboyant in one sequence or whatever the case may be. Like that's somewhat rare when you have someone with, like you said, that it factor. A lot of people are afraid to break, you know, the machismo or the macho like stereotype. And I feel like that's what endeared Cary Grant to a lot of folks, is that he was not afraid to be the side character. He was not afraid to be the funny character. He was not afraid to be the, like I said, the person in the dress or the person in whatever it may be. And I don't know if all of the other actors that were big and well known at that time would have been willing to do some of the stuff that Cary Grant did.
Yeah, it's very true. Like you mentioned, being in a nightgown yelling, "I'm being gay," or, you know, like, I'm, right. Like not a lot of actors today wouldn't. Vin Diesel's not doing that scene. And so, yeah, I think that's certainly. And you could tell he was naturally talented, but obviously had so much. He did vaudeville, and like,
right.
He had all those different little skills that he was able to utilize when necessary. So,
yeah. I think he's definitely a treasure from that time period. I'm not saying, like, I know there's going to be some people that would be detractors of some of the stuff that happened in his real life and things of that nature. I know he was had a couple different accusations of some abusive tendencies towards one of his wives, at least. I don't know if that was true or not. I'm not getting into that. I'm strictly trying to talk and judge and critique his acting and in his films and stuff like that. So I don't want to act like we're not aware of that, but I'm also not necessarily judging him as a person. I'm just judging him as, not even judging him, but just reacting to his acting and things of that nature. So anything else to wrap up this Cary Grant retrospective, Dan?
No, I'm definitely glad we did it. We got to watch a lot of really good movies, a lot of movies I haven't seen before, and movies that certainly have a huge importance within the history of Hollywood. And, you know, bringing it with this and the Hitchcock retrospective, I think it was fun how that naturally just kind of came about. So how about yourself?
No, I'm super glad we did this. Like, as soon as we were going through that Hitchcock, I was like, man, I really want to watch some Cary Grant films. And I'm like, I don't know if Dan's going to want to keep watching stuff from this time period. And you were all for it. So that was like, yes, now I have an excuse. And now that's parlayed into like, my wife tends to fall asleep before I do. And that usually gives me like an hour to an hour and a half where she's asleep and I'm not quite ready to sleep. And it's been perfect to throw on an old Cary Grant film. And I've, like I said, I've been making my way through all the ones that are available to stream. There's probably a half a dozen or a dozen that are unavailable in any shape, way, shape, or form. So I guess I can't get to those, but I've been working in a chronological order. So I've just got, I'm almost through the 1940s. We're 27 films in and I'm almost through the 1940s.
Jeez, so. Wow.
See, if you doing a lot of films.
If you start talking like, you know, they did back then, we'll know why. It's like, oh, you've just been watching too many.
I know. We definitely have to. It's going to be weird, but I've been trying to catch up on 2025 films as well. So it's like a.
That's got to be a whiplash.
Yes, it's a whiplash effect. That's a perfect word that I was trying to think of, because it's like, oh, 1940 and then 2025 and then going back and forth. So it'll be fun to talk about some modern stuff too as we go through here and do some future episodes. So, all right, that does it for this episode. Dan, how can people keep in touch with you or get a hold of you on the interwebs?
I just search Comic Concierge. I'm on all those social media platforms.
You can search me out at Optimus Solo or search the show out at the Cinema Geeks or the Cinema Geek cast. And that does it for this episode. Tune in next time for another chance to listen to more of the Cinema Geeks.